Thanks for tuning in to Shield Clocks Happens, where now you can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, and Amazon. So tune in, sit back, and enjoy.
All right, welcome to Shield Clocks Happens podcast. My name is Dustin Shilcox. With me always, Jameson Brown. And today, Jameson, we got Neil Middleton. And I want to tell you, he's the lead singer of Royal Blitz, and I want to first say how I know them. So I'm from Green River, Wyoming.
Oh, yeah.
And you've been to Flaming Gorge Days. It's like the biggest, it's a small town where we live, but that's the biggest venue that comes through. But we actually have some great singers come through, and Royal Blitz has been there a couple times, and they've put on a badass performance. They actually had busloads of people coming from Salt Lake to Green River to drop him off. I mean, because he's a local favorite here in Salt Lake, and I'm telling you, if you want to see a great show, Royal Blitz is where it's at. Neil, thanks for coming on. Oh,
thanks for having me, man. Thanks for all the compliments.
No, dude, I'm telling you,
Dude, it's hard not to, man. Let's be honest.
That's cool, man. And like I said, I was telling him earlier at the Flaming Gorge Days, you know, he was coming in. I was actually on the committee. I remember the band coming through. These guys were, you couldn't get to them. I mean, I bet that's how the bands come. I mean, but the crowd they bought, I mean, it was unbelievable.
Those shows are so fun. We actually just played up in Rock Springs last weekend.
Did you?
Last weekend, yeah. We still go up there every once in a while and play in small little bars around.
Really? I mean, that's...
We played the Satellite. Sold it out. It was awesome.
I guarantee it, man. I had no idea.
It was a blast. Green River's pretty cool. It's interesting. Those people like to party. They like to rock up there, too.
Yeah, they do.
They get down. It was fun as hell, man. That first time we played there was wild.
So, Neil, for those who don't know a lot about Royal Blitz, you know, tell us about you, man. Tell us about what you guys have done, the roads, man, because you're a rock star, bro. I mean, this is exciting to not only have you on, but man, I'm excited to hear the stories, dude. Like,
there's a million stories. We've been around for 19 years now, based out of Salt Lake City. I was dating a little girl that went to Highland High School. I went to Skyline, and the other guys in the band had a band together already. But it was kind of, I just heard found this out the other day. I must have heard the story before, but so I thought that he was just going on a mission, and that's why they needed a new singer. But it turns out that they were on acid in their front driveway, and they were all in the car sitting there, and he was tripping out, and he had this bad trip and was just like, that's it, I got to clean up my life. And then he found Jesus again and decided he was going on a mission and leaving the band. And I was like, wow, that's pretty sweet. I mean, that was good, you know? I mean, that trip helped me out too. And so I was playing locally around at a place called Geppetto's, which is a pizza parlor up there in Salt Lake, and the guys came down and checked me out and really liked what I was doing. And so basically that night I went with them and we had a jam session and wrote a couple of songs. And pretty much the next day I was like, that's it. I dropped out of college. I'm like, I'm going to be a rock star. There's no more questions. I was working produce at Super Target. I told my boss, like, you got to cut my hours. I'm going to be a rock star, man. And we just went full bore at it. Every single day. All the money we'd made, we put into a rehearsal hall and started writing songs and did our first CD, I think, 6 months after we started. And then we just released a CD like every year. And it just kept getting more and more serious, you know, like, and all of us had the same mind frame where it's like, we wanted to do this for a living. We absolutely loved it. There was no other option. There was no going back. You know, nobody had any college experience. I had 2 years in the community college. And so we got to a certain point where, you know, there was the only option. And it's still like that today, where it's like, it's the only thing that truly makes us happy and that we feel like we're born to do. But, it got, when Capitol Records started bouncing around, and we always thought we'd be independent. We never thought that we'd sign a record deal, because we saw so many other local bands from Utah sign and then get their hearts broken and
kind of
ruined them. You
I was going to say, yeah, I've heard of that. I've heard of a lot of different bands that had these aspirations of going, you know, going to the big time, but then all of a sudden they get signed, they brag about it. Yeah, we got signed. Next, you know, you don't hear anything from them.
Yep, and it happens so often. Like, I remember one band in particular, it was Steel Crossrights band, and I'm totally spacing their original name, but they made them change their band name. They kicked out like two of their members and replaced them with other guys, and I mean, just the typical major label coming in, be like, well, they're not good enough. They don't really fit the image. Like, we're going to give you this keyboardist and this percussionist and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, it was heartbreaking for him. I mean, I bought one of the basses from the guy, their bass player, and he just didn't want anything to do with music anymore.
He was out.
Completely ruined him. And so I was just like, that'll never happen to us. I won't get wrapped up in all that crap. But then finally, Capitol Records, well, there's three labels coming after us because we put out a song called Devils and Angels nationally on our own, and it climbed up the charts, the rock charts, to like 20-something. Then all these labels started sniffing around, and we decided to go with Jason Flom with Capitol Records because he was the president, and he signed us and Katy Perry and Saving Abel that year. And it was interesting working with them. We did a great record, and they were all excited. We spent all their money. We went to Portland. We partied for 2 months and somehow got a record out of it. And one of our best records to date, too. But then after we finished it, we didn't get any phone calls for a little while. And then we're just like, what's going on? And then it turned out that EMI, the parent company of Capitol, mm-hmm. got bought out by some dude that made millions of dollars at rest areas in the UK or some shit, and then bought this label and basically just ruined it, fired Jason Flom and laid off like 2,000 people. So we thought that we were just screwed at that point. But we had in our contract that it was a guaranteed release, so we mastered it ourselves and put it out and worked with a label that was a sub-label under the umbrella of Capitol to help us get it out through the main stream.
How many labels are there do you initially have to work with? I mean, granted, you talked about like that road where it's like someone gets signed by Capitol, for instance, you use them as an example. But I mean, is it based off of how well the band is received where you fit within their umbrella corp?
Well, I mean, it changes really, you know, year to year. Like we just had a meeting the other day where it's like everything, our whole goals for last year completely changed because the industry changes like every 6 months.
It's like on ADD.
Yeah, it's weird. It's really weird. But, you know, like the labels back then, there's a ton of sub-labels, but nowadays there's not really a lot. There's the small indies and then there's the majors, the few giants that are still left. And nowadays you pretty much have to be your own functioning company where you have to have, you know, millions of plays on Spotify and touring experience and CDs sold and have three or four really good songs in your arsenal that are ready to release and be functioning as a company already, because that's the only bands that they're going to invest into nowadays. And back then it was a little lighter where it's like, oh, these guys have some momentum on the charts. They're right. Doing really well. We could probably get in and help these guys out. So it was easier back then to get a record deal. Nowadays, I mean, with all the technology, I mean, we were discussing earlier, like doing this podcast setup right here, super easy, where the technology has changed, you know, with different marketing companies and strategies.
Has that helped you?
Yeah. And I think so for sure. Like for us to be able to sustain the way we've sustained, I mean, we're our own management. We don't have a manager. We don't have a booking agent. We book ourselves. We've been working with William Morris, but they are such a monster company. They're not really much they do. But yeah, we run our own merchandise company. We started our own independent label. We actually signed a couple bands to the label. We just, you have to do everything on your own, you know, because splitting up that percentage and giving some to a manager or giving some to a record label, you end up with such a small part of the pie.
I was going to say, at what point do you make a paycheck? Yeah. I mean, it's like you love doing it, but then all of a sudden it's like, all right, here, Mr. Manager, you get this. All right, here, company, you get this. All right, hey, guys, we got quarters. You know, it's like, right. Let's go play some slot machines at that point.
And either way, you have to love the music first and foremost to go through all that. I mean, and I've been hoping that it would help change and help create better music out there, because no matter what, if you're with a major label or a label that's supporting you, you have to love playing that music for being able to write those checks to everybody else. Or it's the other side, like us, where you're busting your ass doing all these other things that don't involve the actual art of creating music. And so it kind of drains you, where it's like I'm spending all my day booking these shows, or hell, I was a bus driver for a while for our band, and bus driver and doing the accounting and the marketing and filming videos and paying attention to our inventory on merchandise and having these business meetings. Like we have business meetings every week and an LLC and 18 different bank accounts.
Dude, I mean, you need an assistant crap. Like staff.
We do, but then we have to pay them.
It's like, hold on, you screw up on a calendar invite, you're out.
Yeah, it's weird, man. But
so with all that going on, though, how do you guys plan your tours? I mean, see, if you're managing your band, then do you guys like do so many months on touring and then go back and do this, or how does that kind of work out?
Back in the day, we used to be out for 2-3 months at a time, so we just plan a whole, 2-3 month tour that would be gone. Nowadays, we focus on maybe 2 weeks at a time with solid weekends with core dates that we build around, because we have some of us have families here at home, and it's hard being away from, I have two kids and a beautiful wife, and you know, they're extremely supportive and they understand, you know, what's going on. But nowadays it's like, if you're gone for 2 months, plus you're trapped with 7, 8, 9 dudes in a traveling hallway and everybody's like, oh, you're so lucky being out there on the road. You live in the rock star dream. I'm like, come out for 2 days and just spend 2 days with us and then see what you, if you still want to be a rock star.
Imagine all that. Yeah. That's like sitting on a team bus for like 2 months with a whole bunch of just high adrenaline testosterone. And just,
you know what?
We want to rock out, but it's like you're on a bus.
I can imagine what people are thinking, because that's exactly what we thought when you were in Green River.
Yeah.
You know, you guys roll up there in the bus and, you know, there's people taking buses up here to come see these guys. Like, and of course, you know, you're in the backstage and everyone thinks you guys are just partying and then get and do whatever you want. You know, you guys got all the girls and all the,
yeah,
you know, all the drugs and the girls and everything you want. You
sex,
know?
Drugs, and rock and roll, man.
Yeah, right. Man. It's like, man. And then we're getting kicked out by security because we can't get to you guys.
What's funny, I mean, the perception, and it's a lot of bands want you to believe that, you know, and build that perception where it's like, yeah, you know, you got to have that mystique or whatever. And we've never been very good about that. Like, you know, even that show, I ran out in the crowd and was partying with the crowd, watching the bands. And I like hanging out with everybody. I like saying, you know, what's up and thank you for coming. And but we've every manager and every label I've ever had is always like, you're too accessible. You know, you got to hide in the background and da da da, so you're not easy. And it's just, I'm, you know, I love people and I'm appreciative of our fans that put food on my kids' table, so I want to go say thanks to them. And
yeah, for sure.
So that's been a struggle for me.
I gotta say, you know, I haven't talked to him ever, and he comes in, dude, we're just shooting the shit for like a solid, like, you know, 15-20 minutes while everything else is kind of getting set up and whatnot. And it's like, dude, I feel like I've hung out with this guy for like, you know, years. And I can see that, you know, I think we were talking about it before, the it factor. Like, mm-hmm. That is your it factor, man. The people love you because you're like, you're almost like the people's champ. Like that guy, out of Utah that literally is, yeah, just, oh, I got more fans. Let's go hug them. You know, like, let's go in the middle of the crowd. Let's take some shots and have a good time.
Yeah.
Like that's so rare to see, dude. That's so rare. That's cool.
Yeah, especially, like you said, I mean, but people know that you're on this podcast today. Everyone knows that Royal Bliss will be on a podcast because, you know, like you said, you're a rock star and you have a lot of people looking forward to it. So, yeah, I was like, yeah, Neil's coming today.
But he doesn't act like that. That's the thing, man. You know, you're thinking when it, and this, I guess this is me, like, just looking at from the high level, like, you know, just like a normal music fan, that you expect somebody to come in, like, you know, hey, where's my water? Hey, where's this? Where's that? But you came rolling in, dude, and you're like, yeah, man, we're talking about shaving the beard, and we're like, no, man, I can't shave the beard. And, you know, all this stuff where it's just like you can have like a normal dude, like, bro down. Like, it's really refreshing to have that because you don't get that a lot of rock stars. I'm telling you, that's we talked about differing factor, and I think that's what I was listening to on the podcast with Brent was, you know, you got to have that it factor, differing factor, and right off the bat, you can see his. I mean, it's cool just right off the bat.
I think that's one thing, you know, and it's been a struggle. It's been an argument, like I said, where people have told us you guys are too accessible. But I think that is kind of our factor where, you know, we are a band for the people. Our fans are our record label at this point. You know, we're not with Capitol anymore. We're with them for like 3 years. Like this year, we're really going to do a campaign where, you know, we're just like, you tell us what to do. We're just going to release songs whenever we want because we can. But it's our fans that have kept us alive, you know, sharing our videos, sharing our music and being there for us. So it's like, we want to be there for them. And a lot of bands forget that and they get caught up in that, oh, you know, you got to be, you know, can't be accessible. You have to live that mysterious life because you just want them to think that you're this higher than them. And I'm like, well, I'm not higher than them. You know, it's like, so I was talking to a lady the other day, she was a second grade teacher. And she was just like, oh, it's so cool to talk to you. I'm like, you're the one molding children's minds. I mean, your job's 10 times more important than my job. You know, I get to play music and drink beer on stage. And, you know, I get to get drunk at my job. It's awesome. And, you know, and teachers. And I'm like, we need auto mechanics and doctors and teachers way more than we need, you know, rock stars. You know, I get to play music and I'm glad people appreciate it. And I'm glad, I mean, my goal personally and the whole band's goal is when you come to one of our shows, you're not thinking about anything else outside of that room. You're just thinking about having a good time and get lost in the music and get lost in the moment. And that's the goal. Like, no matter how shitty your day was or whatever you're going through in life, it's like, let us take you away. I mean, they're our therapists because I get to sing my lyrics and vent out all the frustrations in my head and the band gets to pour it out to them. And hopefully we're their therapist as well, where, you know, they're pouring out the energy right back at us. So that's how I look at it. But
so
some bands don't, unfortunately.
So from from the 19 years, all that stuff, obviously lyrics and where you get the lyrics from and hardships and where those come from and all stuff. Obviously, that's influenced the way that you write music and the direction you go with the band, all that stuff. You know, tell us a little bit about the last 19 years. What has...
Oh, geez.
You know, where have lyrics come from? If you remember, you know, what's your favorite song, even though it wasn't received as like one of the top Royal Bliss songs, but what was your personal favorite song?
Oh, man, that's tough. Well, By and By has always been one of my top ones. Just, I mean, it's a personal song. It's basically like... Everybody knows that I'm a drinker, and I've always struggled with that. Like, I think I was talking to you about that, where... You know, a lot of the songs in the earlier years, well, the beginning, it started out, we were almost like a reggae rock band, where that's what we were listening to, Sublime and 311, and
yep.
You know, Led Zeppelin and The Doors. It was a mix between rock and reggae, and so songs back then, you know, some of us were still in high school, and it was all about girls and partying and having a good time, and, you know, as life changes, and I always just wrote about where I was in life, and... There was a few aggressive songs. I got stabbed when I was 18 and with a 6-inch buck knife 3 times. And
what
so,
the hell, it dude? Was bad. Like, it could just be a switchblade or anything like that.
It had to be a buck knife.
Who's walking around with a buck knife? That's what I want to know.
I don't know where it came from. But yeah, so, I mean, there was a couple aggressive songs about that. Like, because that was the only, I mean, at 18, I was, you know, whatever. Life was cool. I graduated high school barely, but I had a really good time doing it. And it was about just girls and having fun and being with my friends. And that was one of those things that kind of, you know, it made me angry at the world because it was like everybody, I got guns pulled on me that year. And I wasn't a bad kid at all. I just didn't like assholes. And so if I saw an asshole, then I would like to shut that asshole up. And then I had to stop because all those assholes had guns and knives. And so then, yeah, when I got stabbed, I mean, that pissed me off. So that kind of... That was the beginning of a few things that were negative. I mean, and growing up in Utah, I mean, for me personally, when I moved here from St. Louis at 9 years old, and it was really difficult because the culture here is way different. And I was not a part of the majority, and they were extremely hard on me and my brother. I grew up in East Sandy.
Damn.
And it was not a friendly environment for children or for adults for that matter, where you weren't a part of that group. And if you didn't decide to be a part of that group, then you were... You know, we got labeled for all sorts of shit. And me and my brother would get in trouble. Like, the cops, they'd blame us for things that other kids of the majority were doing. And because we weren't that. And, I mean, I never like calling it out, but you all know here in Utah who I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so music was really my escape. It was like, you know, just like I'm saying, like with therapy to fans, where I would just sit with a guitar. I actually started playing. And I went to a Lutheran church. And my first time playing in front of people was playing the evening mass. I'd play the guitar. I learned there when I was like 13. And then I'd go home and vent shit and sing all the things that were in my head that I wanted to say or without having to beat up the local kids. And I was still able to be friendly with them and kill them with kindness is what I ended up doing. But the music, the guitar was what allowed me to do that, to be go home and just let all the crap that was inside my head, I'd just play. And I still write lyrics that way where I don't sit down and write them on a piece of paper. Whatever I'm feeling at that moment that needs to come out of my head, you know, anybody in the band starts playing something, you know, lyrics start falling out. And, you know, that's still the way I write today, but it was my release from all that. But, you know, we went right into, you know, partying, singing reggae music. And then as life kind of happened, falling in love and jobs and everything else. And then the industry, and it started getting to be more of a job and a lot more serious. And that's when kind of things started switching over into more of a rock vibe for us, a little bit heavier. And we did a record called King Size that kind of had a mix of both, but it even had a hip hop song on it called Roll One. But so we still had the party vibe going on at that point. But then people started taking notice outside of the industry or outside of Utah on what this band in Utah was doing. And so we made some friends manager guy, producer friend that came in and started introducing us to labels and things like that. And it's kind of I want to say so many things, but I know you'd probably sue me. So,
yeah, let's not get you sued today. Yeah. Let's work on that.
But yeah, so I mean, just our first, introduction into the crooked world of entertainment, business, and managers. And at that point, we started gaining some attention with, you know, a few songs and record labels, because they're like, oh, here's this band out of Utah. Like, Universal, I believe, at the time, wanted to move us down to L.A. and give us a development deal. It wasn't Warner Brothers, one of those two. And we said no, because we wanted to stay in Utah, where our fans and our friends were. And we're like, you know, we're going to break it out of Utah. We don't need to go be another one of the rat race in L.A. And that was when I was down in Long Beach, California, and we had a meeting with Sony a week after. And I was partying with a buddy down there, and my girlfriend had moved down there. So I went down to see her, and I fell off a building. And
what?
It was about 35, 40 feet, and hit the ground in Long Beach. And it was one of those things where they didn't think I was going to survive through the night. And then they're like, well, you'll never walk again. And so I couldn't feel my legs, as far as I could move them a little bit, but any movement was like the most intense pain that I'd ever felt in my entire life. It was just, I went into shock. I was in ICU for 3 days. And luckily the internal bleeding kind of stopped. And so they put me into surgery, and I had torn my pubic symphysis in half and broke my sacrum in half. And the sacrum, I know you know what sacrum is. Sacrum is the bottom of your spine. And so that whole bone was completely split in half, and my nerves in there were just on fire, and I couldn't do anything to stop it. So they put me through surgery and put me back together again, and I could move my legs, but I couldn't feel them. I couldn't, like, the sense of touch was gone. And luckily, my left leg came back totally. My right leg still isn't there. And so you guys can see how big my right calf is compared to this leg's all jacked up.
Like, did you think that after that fall and you're sitting there in the ICU and all that stuff, did you think that, like, everything you had just started to almost gain momentum on was done?
Yeah. I mean, it was tough, because I remember being in ICU still and talking to the band, because it was just like, we were supposed to open for Unwritten Law the following week and then had a meeting with Sony in L.A. And so it was just like, what the hell's going on? But it ended up being a blessing in disguise, really, because it got us out of the deal with that manager and bonded us, ultimately it bonded us as a band, because we stuck together. But yeah, I mean, that is rare,
because yeah. You know, majority rules in a band, dude, and if they see the dollar signs, right, and they're getting all excited, that's that chance where you look at the guy from 19 years ago tripping on acid, opens the door for you. Well, that injury opens the door for somebody else. And the fact that your boy stood behind you loyal, that's cool.
I think they were, they were in shock too. Like, for me, it just, like, all the things they were telling me, it never sunk in, and I'm glad it didn't. Where it's like, you won't walk again, you're never going to be normal. It'll just, and all the things that I just didn't listen to. And we have a new song that's coming out called I Don't Listen. It kind of explains like that, but it's one of those things where, even in the beginning of the band, where, people are like, you're never going to be a band that's going to be successful coming out of Utah. It's just impossible. You got to
look what
you're
doing, man.
Yeah. And it's damn good thing that I don't listen. But it was a scary thing for the band, and they kind of distanced themselves a little bit. A few of them were just like, oh, crap, what are we going to do? Like, no fallback plan, no other jobs, no college education. And so it's kind of left them hanging. I promised them, I'm just like, I'm going to get back on my feet. I promise. I'll be able to do this again, and just hang in there, guys. And the doctor said, you need to be in a wheelchair for a year or whatever. And I said, I'll give him, maybe 2 months, and then I'm going to be on stage again. And I went home, and I was going to try to open for Unwritten Law and just go up in the wheelchair and hold on to the mic and sing. And then I went and got checked by the doctors in Utah, and they're like, all the screws are jacked up inside you. Like, they didn't give you big enough screws. And so they're like, either you don't move for a year and you're just pretty much bedridden, or we do the whole surgery over again and double the size of the screws and everything that are inside me. So I said, just do it again, whatever you got to do, because I need to get back to work. And so they did the whole surgery over again in Utah. And that was, that was another setback. And they said, at least wheelchair bound for 6 months. And I told them again, I'm like, I'll give you 3. And so
he's negotiating with the doctors on his time. Hold up. No.
I wish I had
take that off the table. Dustin's over here like, can I get that deal?
Yeah. I said that 7 years ago. All right.
No.
2018, I'm coming out of this. I'm done.
It's fortunate my brain was just, it just wouldn't let me give up. And I, because I mean, there was a lot of guilt there too, let my band down and let the guys down. My drummer, I was saying in ICU, I was on the phone with him, and he's like, well, my girlfriend's pregnant. And I was just like, oh, my God. And that was a big factor for me, too, where it's just like, here's my drummer. He didn't even graduate high school yet. He's probably going to kill me for saying that. And he's got his girlfriend pregnant, and I am his only source of money. And so it was like, that was a big thing where it's like, okay, you got to suck it up and figure out how to get back on your feet one way or another. And our manager sued us, and a producer sued us that we were working with.
Holy shit.
At that point, I was able to find an investor friend that was able to, he stepped in, helped us out, gave us money to pay off the investors, to do a record in the studio. And so we went into the studio and recorded After the Chaos 2. Well, it was After the Chaos 1. And I mean, it was hell. I was in the studio in a wheelchair and then in a cane doing that record. And then going through the lawsuits and reading up all that, just like, oh my God, this is gonna be horrible. And the whole time we were in the studio, we were there for 3 months and we didn't get one song recorded in 3 months. And my drummer rolled his car 3 times, leaving home from the studio. My guitarist put a ski through his face. My bassist broke his leg. We spent 20, 30 grand in the studio and didn't get one track done. I'm learning how to walk again.
Did you fall in Indian burial ground when you hit or something, man?
And it was so like, what the hell is going on? But it was, you know, just more of that year where, you know, as a band, we just kept fighting through it. And for me, because of that accident, I felt like it was all on me, where it's like, I got to make this happen still. I got to pull this through. And luckily, we had brought in an outside friend, Matt Weiniger, and he was moved to Utah because he had a serious heroin addiction problem, and his mom lived here. So he was hiding in his mom's house, just recovering and trying to acclimate himself back into society. And so we went and finished the record in his mom's kitchen and living room. We called it Cat Urine Studios because the whole house smelled of cat pee. And it was funny because Taylor was allergic to cats. And so we'd be in there playing the guitar and his face would start puffing up and he'd have to go outside and breathe and then come back in and lay down his guitar. So it was like it was a whole year that it took us to do that record. And it was just one, you know, from the lawsuits to me learning how to walk to Jake recovering from his rollover to, you know, Chris getting his jaw unwired to be able to do harmonies or anything. I mean, it was just, it was chaos. And that's why we named it Chaos, because after the chaos, because we made it through that record. And so, yes, because it was like we survived and this album's coming out, which was the record that ended up getting assigned to Capitol Records. It had Devils and Angels on it. Well, we went back in and we recorded 2 more songs and named it After the Chaos 2 and remixed the whole thing and ended up, yeah, that's the record that got us signed to Capitol. So it was one of those bonding moments where we survived this year together. Our bass player actually didn't completely survive. He ended up leaving the band and he couldn't handle the road and he was starting to do real estate and making really good money doing real estate. So he was flying into tours and it's like, this is just too much. And then we got signed to Capitol and then the real estate industry crashed. And so I felt bad for him because I love the dude, but it was, it was an interesting year. And then Capitol came in and we did Life in Between, which, you know, was even heavier because it was, you know, songs about what had happened. Well, After the Chaos was a lot of that too. You know, Second Try is a song on that record that I love. It's all about second chances. And then it kind of evolved into Life in Between, where, you know, I had died pretty much, where, you know, I was on my deathbed and like with my stabbings and everything else, where I'd been in a hospital, not supposed to make it a few times. And so I'd been in that life in between from death to life. And also where we're a band that was professional and a touring band, but not quite huge and not quite a garage band. We were life in between. And that was our first, big, and that was where By and By came out. And of course, like with everything that had happened, I was drinking a lot more and a little bit heavier, which was stupid because that's why I fell off the building in the first place, because I was hammered. But yeah, By and By is a song that I basically wrote for my wife's eyes on Life in Between while we were up there. And while we were up there, I was hammered every single day. We'd go to the liquor store and buy half gallon of rum, half gallon of vodka, a couple cases of beer, a couple bottles of wine, and get a 1/4 ounce of Bud and go through that every day. That's what we would do every single day. So by 4 o'clock, we were all schnockered. And I'd do all my vocals around that time too. And it was amazing that that record even got done, but it's still one of my favorites. And I think the emotion of all that, like, but we were living the rock star dream. We signed to Capitol Records. We were living off of their bill in Portland, Oregon. And every afternoon we'd go to the strip club for a break. And yeah, I mean, it was rock and roll. We had done it. But that whole year, I mean, and then, you know, the highs and lows of this band are incredible. It's like we're on the most insane roller coaster that you could possibly be on. And, you know, yeah, like being up there in Portland, we're Cloud Nine. They're, you know, the A&R rep, my buddy Mark Nathan flew up and took us out to dinner. He's the guy that got us signed to Capitol and took us out to dinner and schmoozing us. Then Capitol crumbles kind of, and the guy that signed us is gone. It's like, oh, here we go again. You got to be kidding me. When is this band going to catch a break? But, you know, instead of giving up, again, we just said, you know, let's keep fighting. We believe in the music. We don't want to let our fans down. It's like, we got to keep pushing on. But that was, you know, a lot of those lyrics and so many of those songs. I mean, God, we've written so many songs. And they ended up being angstful songs about the industry and record labels and managers and all the people that had screwed us and all like just the bullshit that's happened. And so that's where we got heavier and heavier and heavier. And that's kind of where, you know, like songs like Save Me, songs Saves Me. I mean, that's another song that's about, I got hammered drunk on moonshine and I stole my buddy's Camaro and was flying all over Salt Lake City going 120 miles an hour and cops were looking for me. And I mean, it was gnarly, and got home and my wife was so pissed and ended up.
I think you were more scared of the wife's reaction than the cops. Like, yeah. I'll be honest, dude. Like,
they weren't going to catch me that night. There was no way in hell.
The wife's right there stamping the foot, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know?
She was so mad and she left that night. And yeah, I got to a pretty dark place that evening and then wrote Save Me. And that ended up being our biggest song on rock and roll. And we almost didn't record it. It was the last song we recorded in Portland. And that blew up around the country. You got to like number 26 on the charts again. You know, pretty much independently, we had a little bit of help from Merovingian, and Capitol Records helped a little bit here and there. But I mean, mainly it was us. We mastered, we forced everything out ourselves. And that was really cool that, you know, we were playing with all these bands, touring with Hinder and touring with the 12 Stones and Saliva and playing shows with Kid Rock. And
big acts, man.
Yeah. Playing Rock in the Range shows with Motley Crue, and
that's,
I mean, it was really cool. We did a lot of really neat tours and Candlebox. We became friends with Candlebox. And
so, what point in time did you realize that you pretty much made it? Like, you were stuck.
I still don't think we've made it yet. Like,
that's good, man. He's hungry. He's hungry. Feed the guy.
Yeah, no, we do it, man.
If we would have been there, we probably wouldn't be in a band anymore. We believe there's so much potential in this band that that's why we keep fighting. You know, we want to, you know, take it to the next level and then level beyond that. You know, it's with everything that we do. And that's why we haven't let anything, you know, tear us down. You know, from me, that whole episode with me and not ever knowing if I'd be able to be on stage again and being up on stage with a cane and jumping around on my left foot only for a couple months. I couldn't just hop around on my left foot because I couldn't stand, this would not hold me up, to, you know, Capitol crumbling in the middle of our record deal. And I mean, just so many things. And finally we got out of that deal and we ended up with another album, went to Nashville and recorded that with a pretty awesome producer out there. And the songs were still, it's just like, angst towards, you know, rock and roll. And so, I mean, all the lyrics, everything's always been about where we're at in life. And nowadays it's like, you know, we have done pretty good. We opened up our own bar 4 years ago, and, you know, we have our own record label now. We're such a tighter unit as a band, the five individuals that make up Royal Bliss now. You know, me, Jake, and Taylor, three originals for 19 years. And then we added Memphis Hennessy from Candlebox. He was with Candlebox for 9 years. And then Dwayne Crawford, our bass player. And we all have our individual talents where, you know, like I was saying before, you got to be a company. And we're actually a functioning company together. And we all have different things that we bring to the table, and we're a family at this point, and we don't want to let our brothers down, so, or our fans, so we figure out how to thrive in this ever-changing environment of music industry.
So what band did you model yourself after in the very beginning? Like, who did you think, that's who we want to go after?
Pearl Jam's always been for me personally, I mean, that's a band that's done it the right way. I know that they split everything equally amongst the band, and they've survived and thrived their entire career, kind of doing, you know, fighting the man with Ticketmaster and things like that. And you know, and you can tell they play from their heart. And that's what I always wanted to do, is just do it our way. And, you know, Pearl Jam did it their way, and they still do it their way. Mm-hmm. So that's a band that, you know, all of us respect. And, you know, me, Eddie Vedder is one of my biggest influences, so.
Yeah, well, I think, Neil, I mean, I think you should tell the listeners and stuff right now, I mean, where they can find your, like, the best place to find the music, you know, on iTunes, and also to get your merchandise, you know, tell them a little bit about the bar you guys have, and kind of, you know, do a little shout out and tell everyone.
Well, I mean, Royal Bliss is Facebook/Royal Bliss, and you can do, I mean, find us on Instagram, find us on all those spots, www.royalbliss.com. And then we have our partners in Boneyard's Bloody Blend, who that's where, you know, sponsored another company we're with and partnered with. And if you look up boneresponsibly.com, you can find our merchandise in their merch store there. And yeah, just, and you can look us up on Spotify and YouTube.
And the bar's name is what?
The Royal.
Okay.
Not a big stretch from the band name. Yeah,
no. Well, man, I gotta say, I appreciate you spending the time. And, you know, we know that a lot of fans listen that may not have the full backstory. We know that there's a lot of fans that are going to become fans that they need to hear you. And that's, you know, a lot of stuff that you said, man, that's just classic. Just, you want a guy who tells you how it is, man. You want a band that tells, you know, that plays the right music. These are guys you check out. But for everybody who listens and continues to listen, we really appreciate the support. Really appreciate everybody that continues to tune in. Again, stay tuned for our next guest that we'll have. And we look forward to every cast that we have had. And we'll talk to you guys later.
You have just tuned into another episode of Shield Clocks Happens. Find previous episodes on iTunes, SoundCloud, YouTube, and Amazon today.
If you would like to be on our podcast and have a story that you want to get out there, visit us at www.dustinshieldcox.com or private message us on Facebook, and we'd love to have you on the show.